Congratulations.
You're listening to Congratulations Pine Tree, the Bay's number one arts and culture podcast with me, Kate Rhodes.
And me, Maysoon Wazwaz.
Well, what happened was this. We went and saw some art before we started recording. We went to Minnesota Street Project. We went to every single gallery
there. We went to every single gallery.
I personally was on a mission to find abstract art because we're doing our 10 weeks of abstraction.
I was on a mission just to see what was up.
This is week three. Then we decided we were doing it.
I'm calling this week two.
Really?
Yeah, because we've been doing 10 weeks.
Okay, we got to come up with 8 more weeks of abstraction.
We have our artists. What do you mean? There's no problem.
Okay.
This is better than what we're usually doing, which is fucking nothing. So at least we have a fucking goal. We're like, okay, look at this work for the week and then talk about it.
Actually, let's go, before we get into Marlo Moss, let's get into that email that we got.
Oh, yeah. Oh, that was cute.
Okay, we got an email in from Doug Hitchens, a.k.a. Dougal West.
Dougal West.
Can I just read you his whole
thing? Yeah, let's read it.
Helen Frankenthaler's Mountains and Sea proved an interesting choice for me personally. That kind of rhymed.
It's had a good flow.
Not long after the work was painted in 1952, my family started vacationing on the New England coast, driving through upper New York State, Vermont, and New Hampshire on our way to the Atlantic seaboard from our home in Toronto. Frankenthaler attended Vermont's Bennington College and painted Mountains and Sea a couple of years after graduating. Not hard to imagine her mountains were influenced by the conifer-covered green mountains of that landlocked state. Her sea by the Atlantic, 150 miles to the east at its closest point, just about where my family spent time on holiday. As you might expect, I did find myself hunting for recognizable elements, the sketched head of a gull perhaps the least ambiguous. Is that a ghostly kite riding the cool breezes off the ocean? A sail out on the water belied with wind? Think about that.
Mm-hmm.
A lipsticked mouth on a pink face flushed with sun.
That's my teapot.
Uh-huh. The airy pastels themselves evoking the shadowless midday brilliance of the beach in high summer? I don't love this work, but maybe that's secondary. It summoned, might we even say co-created, thoughts, memories, and emotions that would have otherwise remained unrealized. Is that enough? Is that the point?
Aw.
Cheers, Doug Hitchens.
Thanks, Doug.
God, Doug, shit.
Doug, really, I really appreciate that email.
Yeah, me too.
But he was really like looking for like references or representational things within the painting, which is interesting to me. But I think it's also because he was so familiar with that landscape where you and I are over here on the West Coast. I've got no idea where she was, you know?
Oh, yeah.
I couldn't start to imagine what that looked like, probably. So it's interesting.
For sure. Folks, email us congratulationspinetree@proton.me, or you can call or text us 419-351-6606. Shout out to our sustaining donors, Jim Prosser and Anonymous. Check out everything on our website, congratulationspinetree.com, where you can see all the paintings that we're talking about. Okay, so this last week we looked at a painting by Marlo Moss.
Yes.
Part of the reason I thought this was a good painting was because the Stedelijk Museum has a thing on their website about this painting and about Marlo Moss.
Mm-hmm.
So it's composition in red, black, and white from 1953. Okay, Maysoon, describe it.
You want me to describe it or you want me to tell you? Well,
yeah, give me your thoughts.
Okay.
So just for listeners, if you haven't seen it, which you should see it on congratulationspinetree.com. It is very sparse. It is white, black, and red, just as the title suggests.
Yeah.
And it has these lines. And one of the big things that they talk about in this...
Don't go too into it yet.
Oh, okay. You go.
Let's just talk about the painting first.
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, one of the things that's in the painting that they bring up in this is the double lines. So there's two lines in the middle that almost seem like they're coming out of the red square.
Mm-hmm.
And the double line thing, it sounds like, was Marlo Moss's kind of contribution to this kind of...
Which is amazing.
...style.
The double line and also the shortened line.
Yes.
With little squat lines.
And the double line, man. Doubling. That's gay. Oh. That's the key to the lesbian, because we were like, how can we see this in a lesbian light? And doubling is a queer thing. Like, think of Felix Gonzalez Torres' Perfect Lovers, the two clocks together that are identical. It's also kind of criticized that there's, like, this read-in to queer art that there's, like, doppelgangers, or, like, this idea that, like, two things that are the same are gay. Because it's like, I'm a girl, you're a girl, same, same. That's how Julia Bryan Wilson talked about it. So doubling is kind of a queer part of the queer lexicon.
Interesting. I didn't know that.
Okay, what do you got?
I don't have
You have
any...
a shit ton of notes.
I have a few.
I mean, the notes, if you could see the notes, listeners, you'd be overwhelmed.
Well, aren't I supposed to be taking notes?
It's a scroll.
While I'm
doing it's a like study? A 40-foot scroll of writing.
Well, the first thing that came to mind was that I really like the way Marlowe plays with, like, the edge of the painting. You know, like, there's these lines that are, like, right up on the edge.
Yeah, or top right corner.
You can imagine that they're going off the edge, that there's a space beyond the canvas that is part of the conversation in some ways for
me. Wow.
And also even with the middle, with this red box and the lines coming off the outside of that space as well. So there's this sort of internal play and then also this external play, which I think is interesting. I was also curious about, like, the thickness of the lines. Like, I feel like typically when you're looking, I don't remember Mondrian. I mean, I know Mondrian, but I'm just trying to think of, like, did he play
did
with
do,
thickness?
Yeah, there were, he definitely had paintings where there were, like, it's very sparse. There's maybe like four lines on the canvas, but they would be of
different thicknesses.
Weights.
Weights. So that was interesting. I was sort of just trying to start by looking at something, and I was just that's what I saw. I mean, it really makes, I was thinking, like, initially it made me really think of, like, graphic design and, like, how you organize a page when you're designing it. It feels very orderly.
Design-y.
And that would make sense based on the, you know, on the work or the aesthetic. What is it, constructivist? Is that right?
Yeah, that's, they talk about her with that. But the constructivist started in Russia, but I guess she was in the mix with that.
Yeah. I mean, Mondrian was a constructivist.
He was like, the Dutch people were more like neoplasticists. And
neoplasticists.
They had the distill and...
Right. Okay, so maybe it was more neo... There is... It's an,
no,
was
they talk
about
her in the constructivism conversation.
What's interesting about this work is that I think of also, maybe because there's so, it's so sparse, you end up kind of considering what we would call the negative space, like
for
the
sure.
white spaces around the black or red spaces or lines, which is interesting. And I was looking for, like, are they even? Like, I think I was just sort of looking. It feels very mathematical to me, like, when you're looking at this. Like, it feels very precise, very, very controlled, like canvas, you know?
Yes.
I made a note here. It reminds me of the Wattis's website. A little bit. It's a weird contextual, like, I don't know.
Where here's the thing over here, and there's
well,
the thing.
There's all these little things popping up. It's very playful in some ways, and there's, like, a moment where I was expecting there to be, like, words revealed, and that made me think about, like, redacted lines.
Ooh.
And all of these other things, which I don't know how that relates to Marlowe, but it just made me, I just was having a whole other train of thinking around this. The square is a red square, which made me think of communism, like, all these different, and I don't know anything about her, so I don't know, like, if those were
if she was a communist
intentional, because it's just black and just that red, like in a lot of Mondrian's pieces or even some of her other works. There's she seems to her earlier works seem to have a lot of yellows in them, and so I was surprised to see red, because I hadn't seen red in the ones I was looking at before. Part of me was like, is it humorous? Is there anything humorous about this? It feels almost like a game, like the way you might move from line to line. And I was like, or is it serious? Like, it's so hard edge or so precise and calculated feeling. I was also just thinking about, like, her relationship to Mondrian. There aren't any lines. And also her earlier work. This is sort of later in her career, like her work from the 30s. She was doing lines that stretched across the whole canvas, like all the way top to bottom or side to side. And so these are all, like, much shorter, distinct lines. So that thought that was interesting to observe, I guess. Oh, I was thinking maybe that's why it feels almost like a text or like a letter in some ways, like with these written lines, or maybe what could be written letters or written. Oh, I think that was it as far as, like, my, I mean, I think one thing I was saying here, or said here, was that it's visually appealing and satisfying, like, to look at and to sort of explore around the empty spaces and then other spaces. Or the lines themselves, boxes. I don't necessarily feel, like, there's not a lot of, like, feeling for me in there, which is fine. And I was looking at, like, this is outside of the painting, just, she did a lot of sketches, so she planned out her drawings. Did you see those?
No.
She planned out, there are a few drawings online that you could find where she planned them out, and it is literally, like, a mathematical, like, there's all these, every space is measured, which I thought was kind of wild and made me just think about, like, to be so calculated in your painting. Like, I don't know. It's just interesting to think about. I don't know if that means.
So when we first looked at it, your immediate reaction was, it feels cold to me.
Yeah.
Did that change at all?
I mean, I still think it's cold, but it doesn't have like a negative connotation for me.
With all these minimal works, I have a kind of dualistic response. On one hand, it feels really calm to me.
Oh, interesting.
And so looking at these things, it feels peaceful because it's almost like a Zen rock garden or something where everything's in its little place. But then because there is kind of a lot of emptiness, especially in this one, it also allows me to project all my anxiety into the quiet.
Oh, like, is that a good thing?
Because I was just thinking back on, is it a good thing? No, it doesn't feel good.
It doesn't feel like it can absorb it. It's like you're releasing it. No, it's just like,
this is giving me space to
to feel more anxious.
Flame out.
Oh, Jesus. Okay.
Because I'm, with another work, even with the Helen Frankenthaler painting that we were looking at last week, there's so much going on that I'm not like just listening to the voices in my head.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah. There's more noise.
And it started to make me think that that's why I like work that's really busy and really like full of stuff. So while can we bring this in?
Yes.
So while we were at Minnesota Street Project, saw...
Oh, you know what I mean? Oh, no.
Okay. So while we were at Minnesota Street Project, we saw this show called Comes and Goes by Mark Perlman at Nancy Toomey gallery, and these things were like the opposite of the fucking Distill people. It was like heavy impasto surface. He puts a layer of encaustic down, carves it all up so you can see like lines. Some of them are like radial lines, some of them are kind of grids, and like carved into the wax. And then on top of that is this extremely heavy paint, and like with like every fucking color of the rainbow. I mean, when you'd step back, some of them would be like, oh, this one's really yellow, or this one's really orange, or whatever, and it would kind of take over. But then when you get close, it's like, damn, there's fucking, he was getting every tube, he was emptying every tube.
I really dislike those.
Okay, why'd you hate it so bad?
I think partially because it's too busy. I'm literally like, what the hell am I looking at? What do you want me to look at? What am I seeing?
There's no like focal point.
There's I don't even know if there's an entry point for me.
Some of them would have like this one. We're looking at the postcard for the show, and like this one has this really bright.
Yeah, they're like the light center, and all of them have like exuding light sort of central to it.
Yeah.
I don't know. I find it very hard to look at that.
How did it make you feel?
Annoyed. Annoyed.
I loved it.
I know. Kate
These
was
surfaces
really deep
were
in.
Like, I wanted to bite into
You're
it.
Like one of those people who wants to lick paintings?
Kind of. With those, they're so like crunchy, crispy. You know, there was like peaks. Crusty peaks.
Crusty peaks. Ay.
I just Tastes the texture, like there was so much going on. I mean, this is exactly what I'm talking about when like there's a painting that's like there's so much that my brain shuts off.
I mean, I think we could do, if we did a similar thing with that style of painting that we're doing with everyone else, I could find a way in. But like just being in the gallery and looking was like, I was like, I don't want to be here, actually, was my immediate feeling.
I'll post an image of one of these paintings in a detail in the underworld.
Yeah.
Because, man, just like looking at Marlo Moss and then looking at these, it's
totally. And I think that's what our, like, when we were walking around MSP, I think we had both had Marlo Moss on our minds because we knew we would be recording,
yes,
talking about her and her work. So I think in looking for other abstraction, it was interesting to see that, which is like so opposite.
Yep.
So completely. And there's like just a big mess. Like her work is like so calculated, so orderly, like. They feel so opposite.
Yeah.
It was interesting. I was looking at I think there was a show of hers at the Tate London a little while ago. And I think they had like this, they had as part of like the show, a drag performance.
Sick.
Yeah. By this drag artist named Sasha Velour. And there was a video with Sasha, not in the performance, but just looking at one of the Moss paintings and talking about it with like a maybe folks from the museum. And they said, this is the drag artist Sasha Velour saying, "I find geometry and color more reliable categories than man or woman. I see myself more in a square of yellow than in a drawing of a man or woman."
Oh, I read that. I loved that. Which I thought
was interesting. I was like, oh, that was like a really like very visual way. It just was a really interesting and helpful perspective and looking at the work.
Is minimalism non-binary?
I know, right?
I say yes.
Yeah. Why not? So I thought that was an interesting thing to like just think or sit on or sit with, I guess.
Let's look at the painting again.
There was also a reference to like...
Who are you in the painting?
Who am I?
Yeah.
In this painting?
Who are you?
I mean, I definitely feel like that little square at the top.
I love that square. You know? I was going to say the same thing.
Oh, really?
Yeah, just kind of like, I almost think that square is kind of sitting back and like taking it all in.
Like a little bit out of place, but still very present, you know? That's hard. Yeah. I don't feel like I'm anywhere in the middle.
I think you're the red square.
You think I'm? Why?
Because you're fucking out and proud.
What are those two lines? My cats.
Oh, yeah. I love that.
So, and then I just, this is, it was an interesting article on the Tate's website. The curator, I think, had written it. So the double line, you know, they had talked about like that, that was like Moss's contribution, like querying the constructivist aesthetic, which I thought was interesting. Because I think before that was always a single line or primarily, and even Mondrian was sort of like, tell me more about that double line.
You know? And then I think he incorporated it into some of his
works. Yeah, he did. For sure. Which I was
so
like,
deal with that, folks, because I kind of thought like the way it was presented when I was reading that biography of Mondrian was that she was like very like she was taking his style and kind of just doing his style, but no, she was actually coming up with new things that then other painters incorporated.
It seemed very like contemporary, like they were contemporaries of each other. Yeah. Like it didn't seem like she was just some like kid like wanting to do what he was doing. It seemed like he was very much engaged with the work she was doing and vice versa, and they were working, they were sharing
in
ideas
tandem,
which I thought was nice to hear. It's always just sort of like, why, you know, patriarchy, of course, but like, why don't we know about her? Like, her work is really incredible.
I love that.
Like, there's this one piece is like so stunning. It's like, I have white and yellow from 1935.
Should we take a look at that?
Take a look at that one.
Okay, so in the bottom left-hand corner is an elongated yellow rectangle.
Vertical, yes. Yellow. And the yellow is kind of a softish, it's not, I wouldn't say pastel, but it's softer than like a,
it's maybe like a Naples yellow or something. And then there are thin, very thin lines.
I know. I just find it, I found it so interesting compared to like her other work. It's like almost like, is this more of a drawing than a painting, you know?
It's extremely delicate.
Yeah.
And then
it feels
there's
very gentle.
Two different whites, but I'm wondering if it's,
I don't
just
really
that,
know if they're two different
just
ones.
That one, like you can see here, I think it might just be that it was put on with like a heavier texture. Maybe it's not a different color, but it's just.
And like this line at the bottom, that's like a softer line. Like that's just so interesting to me.
Uh-huh. Yeah, I'll put it, this will be in the underworld as well.
I don't know. I really liked this one for some reason. I like the one we both looked at also, but I was doing like just a cursory look at her work.
It's weird.
Like this one a lot
How
as well.
How do you plot these things out?
Yeah, we should put a picture of one of her drawings on there. This is so crazy. Oh, and then she had these other drawings that were totally freeform. Circles and spirals and like wiggles and ziggles and like just just completely chaos, like the absolute opposite than what we have been, what her paintings were. And I'm sure she was like needed to break out of this like very calculated
structure
and just sort of like, I don't know, it was so interesting to see her drawings like that, because I would assume her drawings would be similar to her paintings, but they were just so not. They were everything her paintings weren't almost.
Whoa, yeah. Wiggle world.
So interesting, right? I was so fascinated by that.
Absolute wild card. Thank you to Marlo Moss for all you've contributed.
Yeah, she was interesting.
Contemplative. Mm-hmm. Yeah, there was a lot of discussion in that article from this whatever museum that was about like the, who knows how she would identify now.
Oh, yeah. I thought that was, I didn't know how to feel about that.
To kind of speculate about.
I was like, should we be speculating about her gender identity now? I sort of like, I don't know. It just felt like a little bit too invasive for me. I was like, I don't know. It's like this question of like, she probably wants to be remembered as a painter, period. You know?
Uh-huh. Well, I have no idea. Did you? I didn't find like interviews with her.
Oh, yeah. There were just a couple like references from her partner. Oh, Marlo used to always say this kind of thing. You know? That was interesting though. I read that was the Tate article.
And I have a little sip of water.
Yeah.
Thank you.
You're welcome. It did make me want to look into her more, you know? But she definitely came from, I wasn't sure what to expect when we were talking about her last week. She definitely came from like an arts, she went to art school. She studied under Fernand Léger and like she was very much in like an academic art world.
Yes.
Yeah. Which I wasn't sure if, I didn't know, you know, maybe it would be interesting to talk about an artist who wasn't from like a very academic.
Oh yeah. We got to pick a painting for next time.
We're doing Howardina.
Yeah. But we got to figure out what painting.
She's still alive. She's an Aries.
No way.
Howardina, April 14th. We are the same. Also, I wanted to tell you that Marlo was born. Her birthday was May 29th. She's a Gemini.
Oh,
I felt
wow.
Like, I felt like with the double.
The twins.
The double lines.
I was like, oh. That's cool.
I know.
Maysoon, we have a problem here.
Why? Oh, we were have to talk about abstraction. Last week, I decided everything was abstraction.
Oh, yeah. Remember that? Okay, because we're running into an issue here with Howardina Pindell where some of her works have numbers in them.
Yeah.
Like she works with kind of collaging these tiny pieces of paper that are dots.
Yeah.
Little circular pieces of paper. And one of them has all the little circles are numbered.
Wow.
And so I'm like, is that abstract? If you have like numbers.
Let's choose a different one, but and then we need to figure
out. We got to figure that out. That. Can assemblage be abstract? There's a lot of museums like do a little exercise where they're like, make a piece like Howardina Pindell. The MCA in Chicago has a bunch of her work. Okay, folks, this is what we're looking at next.
Let's try it out.
Okay, people, we're going to look at Night Flight, which is from 2015 to 16. It's mixed media on canvas by Howardina Pindell, and there is a link to a very high-res image on our website, congratulationspinetree.com. There's going to be so much content that we can get into with her of like interviews and biographical details and things like that.
And would you say that piece is like pretty representative of the work that she makes?
Well, it's much quieter. I think she has ones where it's like a fucking confetti explosion.
I'm ready for it.
Okay, sick.
I'm going to give each one of these paintings that we're studying or looking at my full attention.
Yes.
Just so you know.
Okay, really good. Any other thoughts on this exercise and what it's done for you, your life and wellness?
I mean, I have to say I've really enjoyed it, actually. It's been kind of like, even though last week when you decided we were going to do Moss, I was kind of mad. I was like, why? I don't want to. But I do love, like, you know, being kind of like whatever about it and then still approaching it with like a full, I'm going to try this. Not like I'm not approaching any of this closed off from the start, you know. I do really appreciate the like journey I go on, you know.
Yeah.
I think it's going to help me look at abstract paintings in the future.
For sure. Yeah.
For sure. Like I already feel that.
But even though you hated Mark Perlman.
That one I was kind of like, I hate this work. I hate this kind of work. And if someone said, can you look at this as you are looking at other abstraction? I would be like, okay, fine.
Should we?
No. Well, if you find a woman who makes work that way out, would be more open-minded to it.
Oh, sure enough. It's so, it's really busy. It's stabby.
Stabby? Why stabby?
Can we talk about one more artist that we saw?
Are we done talking about our own journeys?
Oh, did you want to say more about your journey?
About your journey?
Oh, my journey. What is my journey all about, Maysoon?
No,
what
we're talking about the specific journey, not your journey in general.
No, that's what I meant.
Oh. I'm like, girl, we're not getting into it all. Get out of here. Did looking at Marlo Moss this past week help do anything? Past few days? Did anything shift for you?
I mean, I learned a lot. I got a book.
Do you feel like you have to learn about it? Are you having a hard time just like looking?
I want to understand. I want to understand the context and kind of
the... Do you need to understand before you just look? You feel like you're really into the information.
I feel like for sometimes. Me, just looking at it is not satisfying.
Can you help yourself with that?
To just be satisfied by looking at it? Why do I need to have the context and all these things to be able to feel like I understand what's going on? I don't know. For this one, it just was part of such a large project in art history of like these distill guys and trying to like unlock the essential nature of reality. And like, I just wanted to understand what they were trying to do. Mm-hmm. And then I can understand if I feel like, oh, they did it or not.
What did you feel like?
I mean, this, I'm fucking on board with this shit. I'm fucking on board with the Distill and Mondrian and all these fucking Theo van Doesburg and all Vander Gobbler Goo and all these guys.
Vander Gobbler Goo.
And I just felt like it makes me enjoy the work more to know that they were completely committed to what they were doing. Mm-hmm. Like, it wasn't just an aesthetic project or a design project.
Yeah.
Even though these feel very, like, designy.
Yeah.
There was much more, like, mm-hmm. a spiritual kind of goal that they had.
Yeah.
And so when I'm looking at it, I'm kind of trying to approach it on their terms. And yeah, understanding the context makes me understand more, like, what am I trying to do when I'm looking at it?
Yeah. I guess that, to me, that brings up the question of, like, you know, I don't know how to say this. I'm trying to say, like, one, when do we know art is successful, right? And then two, like, just thinking about, like, if a painting doesn't reflect those ideas through itself, it's almost like, is it successful or I don't know. I go back and forth with that.
In a completely other time from when it was made.
Right.
And so
I wonder what people were thinking about it then.
The fucking war.
Yeah. Well, this was 50s, but it was early
post World War II.
Well, and then World War
I. And she lived. Yeah, exactly. And so I think one of the things that's talked about is like trying to bring back order in an orderless world.
Mm-hmm. That makes sense. And the starkness also, I think, makes sense in that frame.
Yeah. So then, I don't know. That's why I just get a little kick out of
finding out this stuff. No, I'm not saying it's wrong. I'm just, because I also like to know a little bit more too, but I also feel like I can get, there's part of me that's okay with just sitting with like the work itself.
For sure.
And not feeling like I need to have like all the answers to it almost, or I'm trying to embrace that part of it.
Just having a one-on-one relationship.
Because I think so much of how my brain works is wanting to have logic involved, like make sense of everything. And so for me, this challenge is about like just not necessarily needing to know everything.
Interesting.
Even though I end up doing a little bit of like cursory looking into or reading, but that's only after I've done a lot of looking, because I just don't want it to influence too much of just looking.
Uh-huh.
For me, at least. I don't know.
For sure. This book, if anybody wants to check it out, it had like a good bullet train ride through the history of this time. It's called Cubism in Abstract Art by Alfred Barr.
Huh.
And I think he was the director of MoMA.
Yeah.
Right?
I've read his work before, like in our history classes.
Yeah, exactly. Obviously, it's completely male-centric. It's not really, it's just like the patriarchal art history that we're always trying to buck against.
Mm-hmm.
But it was helpful to me to just have these, to understand the movements and how they related to each other.
Yeah.
So if you want to check that out, I'm sure nobody's going to buy it, so it'll be here at all. Just take a look while you're hanging out. Yeah, so that was cool. And I think, you know, same thing with Howard Ina Pindell. Like, yeah, I'm really interested. Okay, so I'm going to just look at it and give it my virgin eyes before doing too much research.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm really excited to hear her thoughts on
totally
abstraction and how she, like, her trajectory to get to that.
What year was the one? 83?
I think it's 80-81.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, I don't even know if that's, I guess that's probably mid-career for her or a little late.
I know she was making those videos in, like, I want to say the 80s.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah. Okay, Maysoon, anything else on Marlo Moss? Legend. And champion.
I'm really glad to have learned about her.
Me too.
I would never have known her.
We got to know every dyke in art history.
We just need to know these women who were actually influential to, like, the time, who we didn't get to learn about in our fucking classes.
Yep.
Because of patriarchy.
Alfred Barr.
Well, yeah, fuck that.
Yep.
It makes me want to, like, try to, not discover is the wrong word, but try to unearth maybe, like, other women in these very distinct art movements who were given very little attention.
For real. Okay, another thing we saw was this show Waves Come In, Waves Go Out at Municipal Bonds over there at Minnesota Street Project. This was a very different kind of abstraction. Mm-hmm. The pieces I was really looking at were by Jane Springwater.
Okay.
Who made these gestural drawings that kind of... Oh, yeah,
she was actually in the gallery when we were there.
Yeah, but we didn't talk to her. I was too scared.
Hell no.
And I didn't want to get sucked into something.
No. Remember, there's pen or pencil?
Let me tell you.
I forgot. I did look. I was carrying around the sheets everywhere.
It's ink.
Ink, okay.
Yeah, it's ink on paper. And they're...
When they say that, what does that mean? Like, you're making such a fine line. What are you using?
I would be surprised if it was anything other than, like, a ballpoint pen or something okay. like
that. That's how I saw that.
Yeah.
Like, that's not possible with a paintbrush, right? I mean, that seems insane.
Oh, no, it's not okay. painted. It's ink. Yeah, no.
But when someone says ink, I sometimes think of, like, ink...
Brush.
Brush, right?
Yeah, sure.
Otherwise, I'd just be, like, pen on paper.
No, this is a very fine line. It looks like... Yeah. And they are, so what I'm looking at right now is there are two columns of curved line, very dense curved lines, and it's all uniform, the same line over and over again going down the paper.
I think it's actually a double line.
You think she had two pins?
No, I think that when you say a line, I think of like a start and an end, but I think...
Oh, yeah, no, it's coming back and forth.
It's coming back, but do you think she stops at any point, or do you think she's just keeping the pen on the paper the whole time?
I have no idea. Because there's not...
It is distinct on the edges that you can see she's wrapping
around.
There's
a curve, yeah.
She's curving around, so there's no like start... Each line doesn't necessarily start and... Well...
If you can kind of imagine what she's doing, you can see her hand making these arced lines... all down the page, and then, or the paper, it's a big piece of paper. Mm-hmm. And then, so on the left-hand side, they are convex.
Yes.
If you think about it, they have a hump on the top. Mm-hmm. And then on the right-hand side is a column, very similar, but upside down.
Concave,
where they're doing...
Yeah, but together they actually look like they could be one
wavy.
Line, except for there is a distinct column division.
And what's impressive to me about this, well, you can really feel the hand of the artist, mm-hmm. first off, and just that the lines are so fucking uniform.
Yeah, it's
it's kind of impressive.
And also they were really big drawings, you know, sort of like, I can't imagine like when I think about her making art, the artist making this, it feels very physical, like physically taxing.
Oh,
almost,
gosh.
You know?
Yeah. Yeah. It's like
because
hundreds
of the precision
and hundreds of
and
lines.
It's very neat.
But like really, it's just two lines. Maybe if she never rests,
I can't
imagine. It's one continuous line.
It was beautiful work too. Visually very beautiful.
Very delicate.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. I don't know if I like it.
I like it.
I'm impressed with the physical exertion.
Yeah.
But I don't know that I would like want that in my home.
Yeah. I probably would want in my home, but I did enjoy looking at them.
Yeah.
I was more interested in intrigued by the ones that were like clay on fabric, but it looked like photographs.
What the fuck?
Do you remember that one?
No.
Come on. It was the first one when you walked in. It looked like it was a photograph of like the ocean, maybe.
Uh-huh.
But there was like some kind of like clay on fabric and then like a hand, like graphite. So it was like, it was drawn.
That's crazy.
To look like the ocean. It was very confusing. And I was like, maybe I'm missing something. I didn't take any photos of anything. That's how committed I was to looking, to looking only.
To just pure looking.
Pure looking people.
Where are we at with triangles?
I'm fine with triangles.
There was a time with my friend Eli, shout out to Eli.
Eli!
Where we were really making fun of triangles.
It's so funny to me.
It felt like everyone in the world was doing triangles. They don't seem to be as in vogue now as they were like 10 years ago.
I didn't realize they were in vogue. I'm trying to think about that.
Real quick, in our final moments together.
Whoa, dark.
Can assemblage or collage be abstract? If you're seeing, like, sometimes with collage, even with some of these Howard Dina Pendel paintings, I'm like, this
There's
screams
texture.
Paper. Like, it's representational because there is paper, you know? It's like if you put a flower on the canvas, okay? Yeah. Or whatever, broken ceramics, for example, mm-hmm. or whatever. Can it still be abstract? I mean, like you were saying last week, like, if you're just in the mindset to see abstraction wherever you're looking, you could think anything's abstract. Because it is shapes.
But we can identify canvas and paint and pencil.
See, yeah, I was thinking
so
that too.
So I feel like if the material is just being used as a material and not as like the newspaper, it's just being used as a material, not as something you read, then I think it falls into abstraction.
Sure.
And clay is like, or broken ceramics, it's like you don't know if it was a vase or whatever. It loses its...
Well, let me show you a painting by Julian Schnabel. Okay. So I forget the name of this painting. I'll put it in the underworld. But Julian Schnabel did a piece where there's just shit tons of broken plates affixed to the surface of the painting. And even some of the plates have like decorations like flowers.
Yeah, or the, you know, the stamp, you know.
See, so would you call that piece abstract?
I mean, I don't know. It feels abstract because it's just kind of like, but I see what you're saying and I have no idea.
Right? This is a real issue.
We need an abstract painter to weigh in. Someone who's like really spent their lifetime working in abstraction.
Yeah. And also has a PhD in art history.
Do you
want
to name out? We don't know the title of that. Okay.
Yeah. I'll put a link in the underworld.
Abstract painters out there or painters in general. Kate, you're also a painter. Uh-huh. If you have anything to weigh in on this conversation, please help us because we're figuring it out. I certainly don't know.
Freaky, freaky stuff. Because we were going through Minnesota Street Project and I was on a mission to find abstraction and I'd think something was abstract and then all of a sudden it's like, oh no, this is kind of like flowers in a field or something.
Yeah, yeah.
And then I'm like, oh, not abstract. Goodbye.
Yeah.
I don't know. I
remember
think
the Mr. Potato Heads we saw?
Who was that? There were all these Mr. Potato Heads with
penises and vaginas.
I'm bleeping all that. So inappropriate.
I wasn't expecting to like it, but then all of a sudden I kind of got into it. I liked it because now I have these new fresh eyes.
I love that. I hated it. I fucking hated the Mr. Potato Heads.
What about the other ones?
All the stuff in that gallery was like a big no for me.
It was very much like I described it as Alice in Wonderland vibes.
Ugh, nasty.
Narsty.
But the worst of all was these like weird like Chuck Close
kind of terrible
portraits of like celebrities.
Painting, not photo. Well, Chuck Close is a painter, that's right.
Yeah. Where there's like it's made out of like multicolored dots and circles. When you step back, it's a fucking Marilyn Monroe.
Yeah.
And I think that is just, I was like, that's something you'd find at like.
It really felt like.
IKEA?
It really felt like they were getting ready for the art fair, you know, to have to like a bunch of people come in to try to sell.
But who the fuck wants that?
At the art book fair? I've got no fucking idea. They should put some weird fucking shit up. It's a bunch of weirdos at that fair.
Yeah. There was a show of Moleskine.
In a good way.
Yeah. There's a show of Moleskine notebooks that people had painted in and drawn and like done all kinds of interesting.
Yeah.
Interventions into Moleskine notebooks.
Yeah, I guess that's like an ongoing show. Where
I think that was very appropriate for this book fair.
Oh, yeah, exactly.
Books.
Correct.
Maysoon, it's hard to look at things.
Oh, yeah. We went to Slash.
It took a lot out of us. Slash had a show called Virtual Crush that was all different digital computer freakouts. Sexual activity.
They described it as like, what was it? The avatar as a stand-in for human presence.
Great. It was a good show. Like, I understand the relevance.
Kate felt really bad after that show.
It made me feel disgusting.
Wow. Yeah. I definitely did not. I felt really intrigued by it.
I mean,
there were some pieces that were more compelling to me than others. Obviously, that happens, but.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I had a favorite piece there where it felt like there was a figure. It's in a video and it's like an actual person performing within the video.
Yeah.
And it's kind of like a cam girl kind of vibe, like doing internet, like sex work kind of stuff. Did I not take a photo? Who am I? Oh, man, I didn't get the name of the artist, did I? Because that was my favorite piece. But even that one made me feel nasty.
That one made me feel a bit like I shouldn't be there.
Yeah, she's like dancing and
yeah,
she seems naked, but then you can't really see
any. She's wearing
you can't
very
see
little
anything.
Clothing. I liked the video that I was sitting in front of for a while. with like the avatar writing on like a weird little.
Yeah, that was cute.
It was really well made is what I was surprised. I mean, not surprised, but I was noticing as I was watching it. I don't know what it was about, but I enjoyed it. It was very visually like engaging. Like there was so much to look at in that piece.
It made me think about digital spaces and how so much more is possible in there. Because I was thinking if that artist wanted to actually create that space. So in the video, it has it's all computer generated animation and but it's very realistic.
It feels like it's like in a parking lot.
Yeah. And it's all like built out with like boxes out, and
wooden, like plywood characters boxes
and I'm like, if that artist wanted to make that, it would be such a bigger ordeal than just making the video where you can see it. And I'm like, and is it even like, would actually being in that space even be a better experience or like a more significant experience?
It would be a really different experience than just watching it and hearing.
I mean, it would be cool to see some kind of weird person in a little cart, like riding around.
Yeah, I could see that being like a single installation where parts of the video are in the room with you.
And you get in the cart?
Maybe you get in the cart, or maybe the cart's there. Maybe the cart is moving.
There should be more cart art.
I thought that video was pretty fun. I could have watched that for, I don't know, maybe I did watch your whole length. Thing. No, just for the whole length of the video.
Yeah, that was a good one.
The screen with like the what looked like little internet like typings.
Like Twitter posts and stuff.
Yeah. It wasn't like a huge idea.
But several of the works had kind of just verbal commentary on people's relationship to like their phones and the internet and things like that. Like being addicted to their phone and wanting not to be it's kind of like you want to leave the internet and you can never leave.
You can never leave it.
Because it's with you all the time now.
Oof. Boo. Is that why you felt so dark about it? Did you feel like, or just it made you feel icky?
When I was leaving, I felt like I had been coated in slime.
Oh, wow. It's so interesting.
The internet is a gnarly place. Hmm. There was another piece that was kind of like a stereoscope or a zoetrope or whatever the fuck you call those things, where there's like a little eye, a little thing to put your eyes in.
The object itself is really beautiful.
But then you look in and there's a video. Yeah, what was that? Like 3D printed or something?
Yeah, it must have been.
And then you look in and there's like this video that looks like porn. But then you look at it and you're like, wait, there's no actually discernible body parts.
Yeah, but it definitely felt like.
You're seeing like something that looks phallic kind of and like some like kind of orifice.
They looked like you would just imagine. I thought they were vaginas going on in there. It was weird.
There was definitely vaginal.
And there was like a hand that was like rubbing, but it was just not rubbing anything. It was just rubbing this like white, what looked like a skin surface. Not actual.
Yeah.
It was weird.
I mean,
it was disturbing, but like then you were like, but why? There's not like nothing's actually happening here.
But it's making you feel that kind of nasty vibe.
Nasty.
So overall, I loved the show. Yeah. I thought it was a great, I'm glad that we have access to shows like that.
I think Slash really puts on some really interesting shows. Shows make me think there.
I'm going to have to give it like an 8.3.
Ooh, interesting.
Which for me, that's kind of rough, but I would call that a solid B.
B show?
I would call that a B.
Should I give it a rating?
The work was great. It was so like well curated and the curation was extremely considered. There was even a curatorial statement that was it was its own video.
Yeah, it was wild.
Like they did the curatorial statement as an art piece, which was extremely cool. And I don't know, it was all great, but it made me feel like garbage.
It's so interesting. I'm trying to come up with a rating here.
Yeah, go ahead and rate that one. If I was doing a Maysoon style rating, it would be that moment in old school Nickelodeon when they unleash the gack on you. The like green slime just falls out of a bucket onto your head.
My feeling is that maybe this is going to be, I'm not sure if this is accurate, but I feel like it's going through a car wash without a car.
You're going like opposite world because that's kind of clean.
Well, yeah, but you're being slapped in the face with big, giant, flapping pieces of like wet cloth and then blow drying out. Like if you imagine that, it's actually quite
abrasive.
Abrasive, violent, weird.
Traumatic.
I don't know about traumatic.
I'd be traumatized.
You have those big wheels just like.
I mean, who put me in there?
You walked in yourself.
I just went in voluntarily.
We walked into that gallery on our own.
Nobody was trying to force us in.
So I feel like it's a car wash in like this weird experience way. Not a bad way. Like for me, it was an interesting. I liked the show. And you also liked the show. I didn't feel the way Kate felt. So, but that is mine.
Okay.
Walking through the car wash without a car. Exciting, kind of uncomfortable.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, a very wet, different.
Like blow dried. Your hair ends up, you know, you feel like you walk in looking one way and you walk out looking another way.
Whoa, like, that's cool.
Transformative.
What more could you ask from a show?
I don't know. I think it's pretty good.
Yeah. Okay, well, on that note, let's go ahead and say Free Palestine. And from the bridge.
To the other bridge.
To the island in between. This has been Congratulations, Pine Tree.